This is a Maidenshare meeting, and today it's with great pleasure and much gratitude that we welcome Tarek Kay from Birmingham, Alabama, who's coming to share for about 30 minutes, after which we'll open up for general sharing. Tarek, thank you so much. It's wonderful to have you here, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, James. Good morning, everyone. My name is Tarek. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a pleasure to be here. And the reading, my task is to share my experience with the daily reprieve that we have as contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition and the discipline that I believe is involved. And step 11 in our big book says, you know, we let God discipline us in this way. I've always had a few years into my journey, I began to develop a problem with a resistance to the way that's phrased in our big book. You know, I couldn't wrap my mind around how I let this power do anything. So the discipline that I'm going to talk about and the spiritual condition, I believe they're gifts from God. The God of my misunderstanding. It's a power that I cannot fully define or comprehend. It's interesting, you know, when we share our experience, you know, there are several parts of the big book that give us a specific instruction. My favorite's on page 29. We describe in our own language and from our own point of view how we established our relationship with God. And, you know, there's parts of the book, another part of the book says each teller or storyteller, there's a variation in how each of us comes to know this power. But in all of our sharing and all of our testimony, we are tasked with describing a power that the big book then tells us we cannot fully define or comprehend. So it's a little bit of a interesting paradox. But we have to start somewhere. And this reading, it's interesting. I've been in big book studies almost my entire time here. I've always attended a big book study. Years ago, it was brought to my attention that the word reprieve actually means a stay of execution. So we have a stay of execution contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And this requires discipline. And then that discipline, where does that come from? You know, it's attached to our willingness. And the willingness is a gift. And if I can look at it that way, the way I live my life begins to express my gratitude for receiving this gift, because I'm sure there's many people on this call that have been around for quite some time, and we see people come and go. I've seen the number of people I've seen go versus the number of people I've seen stay. There's a variance that's very large, and the number of people I've watched leave is far greater than the people I've watched stay. I wish it was the other way around, but it's not. And I know a lot of them, you know, we used to hear this thing, this program is not for people who need it or want it. It's for people who do it. And so there's an implication there that they just made a choice that they didn't want to do it. And I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe there are some days where I believe that to be true. And there are other days where I really want to see it as a gift, because when I see it as a gift, it's like if I left out my sobriety date when I introduced myself, but the power that's greater than myself that separated me from alcohol and drugs on the morning of November 5th in 2007, I introduce myself from whenever I give talks that way, because I don't ever want to take credit for the separation. I don't want to take credit for the miracle of separation. That's the first miracle that we experience on this journey. We're separated. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a speaker to share this story this morning. That miracle has to happen quickly. The second miracle, which is the returning of sanity, which is attached to our spiritual condition, it happens over the course of time. But the only way it's attainable is if it's attached to this degree of willingness and discipline. My late grant sponsor used to say something. It always landed deeply with me. The first time I heard him say it, he said, "Discipline is the horse I ride." And I understood what that meant. And so I knew it was going to take a great deal of commitment. You know, and our third step, it says we think well before taking this step, abandoning ourselves utterly to our conception of a higher power. And the abandoning is attached again to this idea of, you know, what am I willing to do? And it's like attending meetings. When I first started going to meetings, in the reading, it says, at first, because we must, because there's a requirement, I have to go. I have to go to these meetings. I have to get a home group. I have to learn how to pray. I have to set aside time to sit still and meditate. I have to write this inventory. I have to disclose all these intimate details about my life. I have to go make these amends and clean up the wreckage of my past. There's always the requirement. Somewhere along the way, then I want to. Maybe before the want to, there's a need. It goes from having to, because my life depends on it, because I really need to do this. I really want to do this. And somewhere, and I can't tell you when the transition point was for me, it transitioned into, I love to do these things. And because that was attached to the effect that was produced by doing all of these things, it says, great suffering and great love are AA's disciplinarians. I was, you know, when I see something written like that, I wonder, what holds greater benefit for the individual trying to recover from alcoholism? Is it the great suffering or the great love? Is it a combination of the two? I'll tell you, in 15 years of being here, I would have to say the dark times that I have been through have benefited my spiritual condition more than the good times that I've been through. There's something that happens in the good times where the awareness to give God the credit is not available to me all the time. And so, especially when people pat you on the back, you start to become unaware of the grace and the mercy and the gifts. I remember I was 5 years sober when they started asking me to step up to the podium and share these events and, you know, different places around the country and the world. And the ego loved it. It had a negative impact on my spiritual condition, believe it or not. It is, you know, I'm ambivalent. I am ambivalent whenever I get asked to do things like this. I'm ambivalent when I get asked to speak at conferences. And I always want to be ambivalent about it because it is the only way I can't speak for everybody. It's the only way I can be aware of the negative impact it's having on my spiritual condition. I know people say, oh, I feel like God is using me. He's using my experience. I would venture to say that anyone that does not acknowledge the ego's enjoyment with things like this is unaware of what's really going on. So this morning I had to sit in meditation and have this contemplation within myself because I never want to get to a place where doing stuff like this has something to do with the maintenance of my spiritual condition. This is a responsibility that I have. The third step says, Tarek must bear witness of this power, taking away my difficulties so my testimony can convince other people that we have a solution here that works and it's possible for me to recover and not take a drink for the rest of my life. But the idea that getting up this morning and giving this talk has something to do, Now, my spiritual condition had to do with me saying my prayers this morning, reading a few books this morning, and sitting still this morning. And then I get to do this for fun and for free. That's just the way I look at it, because the maintenance of that spiritual condition is what keeps me from the execution. It grants me the stay of execution on a daily basis. And again, somewhere along the way, it went from it was a requirement to this place of I love to do these things. The only thing I don't love to do is make amends. It took me 8.5 years to approach over 200 people in institutions and pay. I made a financial amends this month. And I have paid back over $30,000 in my time here so far. And I have harmed, believe it or not, I've harmed a lot of people in my 15 years, because I still step on the toes of my fellows sometimes. I still become consumed with selfishness and self-centeredness. I still become driven by fear. And I still get to these places where I drown in self-pity, and I take it out on the person closest to me sometimes. And so I have to set aside time to sit down. Sometimes it's a 10th step apology because I see it so fast. Other times I have to go back through the steps, and then I see that, oh, I need to sit down with this person and take responsibility for the mistakes and where I was at fault just now. And so all of these things put together have a deep impact on my spiritual condition. But something happened to me. So, you know, I get sober in November of 07. I land in a boiling kettle of big book enthusiasts. They walk me through the big book, line by line, Joe and Charlie style. I start making some amends, and I'm sponsoring a lot of guys, and I learn how to pray, but I don't meditate. And about a year and a half goes by. And in that last 6 month period, I don't think I made any amends from the time I picked up my 1 year anniversary through the time about 18 months. And I began to struggle, and I was not in fit spiritual condition. And all I was doing as part, I had no 10 step. 10 step is it's an awareness step. It's how I stay connected to God throughout the course of the day. It has more impact on my dialogue and my communication with the God of my understanding than the 11th step does. The 11th step is more of a sacrifice or an offering to God, that I'm going to set aside this time, because cultivating this relationship and cultivating the expectancy of God's presence in my life is I need it. It is vital for this individual. And so it becomes a sacrifice. But the step that has more to do with the actual communication and the dialogue is step 10. But that's not the way it was introduced to me at first. The way it was introduced to me at first was that, hey, it's a way to do 4 through 9 spot check style throughout the course of the day. Stop, examine, apologize, admit you were wrong, move on with your day. And it was effective until it wasn't effective anymore. And what ended up happening to me around after I picked up my 1 year anniversary was I was sleeping around in the program. I was just as active in the 13th step as I was the 12th step. I hate to admit it, but that's just a part of my experience. It hurts for me to say that, but I have to, because the expression of the way we struggle and how we overcome those struggles are part of the testimony that we give here. They're part of the evidence that we show ourselves in order to have that decision to stay and take these actions. But for the newcomer, we're all going to fall on our face and make mistakes. And one of the reason I believe I've developed such tight bonds with the men I sponsor is I have never placed myself in a position where I will not let these sponsees know how I have fallen short and how I have made tremendous mistakes. Right. And then there's this deeper empathy that I have for when they're struggling. And I don't just say, cut that shit out. You know, there I have to understand at a deep level in order for to build the environment of trust with the guys I sponsor. And that's just something that works for these relationships in my life. And so at this point, you know, I'm a year sober, I'm struggling, I can't sit still, I can't be by myself, but I'm sponsoring six or seven guys. And I have, and when I share in a meeting, I have a message of depth and weight, right? But my behaviors are not lining up. They're not aligned or congruent with this message I'm carrying. And that creates an identity crisis. Right. I sound good in the meeting. People pat me on the back and then I'm doing stuff I'm ashamed of. And you can't be in fit spiritual condition when you exist in that place. And so when I was 9 months sober, there's a clubhouse in Atlanta and there's a guy that stands out. He leaves the meeting about 5 minutes before the meeting and he stands outside. Back in the day before everything went digital, we actually used to have these things called CDs and he would have a stack of CDs. And he would hand them to you as you walked out the door. And when I was about 9 months sober, I hadn't picked up my year anniversary yet. He handed me two CDs. And I walked to my car. I said, thank you. I put them in the door of my car and I went about my business. So now you fast forward about 9 months. I'm a year and a half sober, sponsoring a bunch of people. I've got problems in personal relationships. My emotions are all over the place. I feel miserable. I haven't gone into depression yet. I have moved back into my parents' basement because I have so much, I owe so much money for the financial amends. That was a good decision. My parents would let me live rent free so I could pay these people back all their money. And, but I was embarrassed because I was at this point, I'm almost 33 years old and I'm back in my parents' basement. And I feel like, I have this job where I'm watching all of these. I used to, be a valet. I would, you know, park cars at a really nice restaurant. And I'd see all these guys younger than me that are driving the $70,000, $80,000 car, and they'd have a beautiful woman on their arms. And my mind goes, you have pissed your life away. God, why have you done this to me? Why couldn't I get mine? Where is mine? You know, these are the things in my mind. So I'm venturing into this place that I'm not doing well. I'm uneasy. I'm easily annoyed, and I'm not satisfied with what I have. I have no appreciation for the miracle of separation. I have no appreciation at this time that God has restored my sanity around the desperate experiment of the first drink. The problem has been removed around the first drink. But now the real problem starts to come to the surface because the alcohol and the drugs were never the problem to begin with. There's a deeper underlying problem. And so I leave a meeting. I'm driving home. I got about a year and a half sober. And for whatever reason, I get this intuitive thought that says, put the CD in. And I put this CD in, and it's a man who would become my grand sponsor. He has passed away, but his name was Mark Houston. You know, may he rest in peace. And Mark was talking about meetings that start with meditation and how much he loved them, that they brought him here, current, to the present moment, that there was, there's no reality in our lives other than this breath and this moment that we're taking right now. And that was news to me, brand new, headline news. I was like, what is this guy talking about? And so then he starts to break down the 10th step into these individual practices. Watch, ask, turn, stop fighting, practice the code of love and tolerance, the position of neutrality, the sixth sense, intuition. And I'm thinking to myself, what book is this guy reading? Because this book was not broken down this way to me. And he started talking about meditation and the importance of meditation, which I had failed. I had failed to wrap my mind around that. And I wanted more. I wanted more of what this guy was talking about. And then I put in this second CD, which was another guy who, you know, people know who he is. He's got a patch over one eye and he's talking about the spiritual malady. And he describes what I'm experiencing at a year and a half sober, the restlessness, the irritability, the discontent. And so I started looking for these guys and I found somebody connected to them And this guy became my sponsor. And he was my sponsor for almost 8 years. And I began to realize I wasn't taking the steps to be in fit spiritual condition. I didn't realize that I had a daily stay of execution, but contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. But there's a question that has to be answered by all of us on this call this morning. What actions do I take that impact my spiritual condition? It's important to have a home group. It's important to, I believe, have some type of responsibility or commitment at our group. You don't need to have an actual service position to have that commitment. You can just say, I'm going to show up early, help if help is needed, or I can stand outside and just greet people as they come in and introduce myself. Believe it or not, that's a huge service, especially for someone new that's coming that doesn't know anybody. I have to communicate with other members of our program and our fellowship. I have to begin to develop relationships with closed mouth friends so I can disclose intimate details of my life to them so we can start a dialogue about what it's like to live the spiritual basis of life and compare notes, because that's how these bonds develop. We have to talk about the God idea. I have to do the work in steps 4 through 9 to clear away the stuff that stands in my way of being aware of a power greater than myself. You know, Mark used to call it the hollow bone. And I have to sacrifice my personal time. I'm going to tell you guys this is not a funny story. I take that. I'm going to tell you a sad story. Last night I'm at dinner with a sponsee and his fiance, and then I had my family with me. And one of the things I love to do is I like the guys I sponsor, I want them to see how a recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous lives with his family, how he interacts with his family. That's vital. That's another way to model the program. And so last night, he and his fiance are out to dinner with me, myself and my family. And they're telling me this sad, sad story about this girl and our program, who gets to the point where she's ready to sponsor. And the fiance either overheard the conversation in a meeting, and she was telling this other girl, look, the weekends are mine. I cannot work steps with you on the weekends, and I prefer not to do it on Friday night. You know, now that I think about it, the only time I have time to meet you is before the home group on Tuesday nights. And my jaw about hit the floor. Because that is the exact opposite of what our big book describes in working with others when it talks about the 12-step promises. And these are responsibilities that are going to be an inconvenience. You know, typically on Sunday mornings, I hold a Zoom call with all the guys I sponsor from everywhere. We all get on this call. It is my favorite meeting that I attend, you know, and it's usually held at 8, but I had to cancel that meeting in order to be with you guys this morning. And I thought some of the guys on the call, because we have it every Sunday, they wouldn't mind taking a Sunday off. No big deal. That's a sacrifice for me, because I that's my favorite meeting of the week. Waking up, you know, earlier on a Sunday, there's a sacrifice in that. And I'm not trying to gloat about it or boast about it. That's not what I'm doing. I'm trying to give you examples of sacrifice. Sacrifice is last weekend on Saturday. I had to speak at another Zoom meeting, and I had to meet with sponsees 2 other times throughout the course of the day, and I had to make time for my family. That's not convenient, but it's a responsibility. It has something to do with the maintenance of my spiritual condition as well. But what has the most to do with my spiritual condition, you know, I met a man about 6 years ago who's been my sponsor for the last 6 years. He's a wonderful man. He's a gentle giant. He's small in physical stature, but he's one of the giants that I have met in my time here. And this man has taught me that, you know, the greatest gift that God has given me is my recovery. And what I do with that recovery is my gift to God. What I do with my recovery is my gift to God. You know, and Ralph said one time, he said, Tarek, don't let the life AA gave you get in the way of your AA life. I mean, these are little sound bites, but damn it, if they did not land deep the first time I heard this man say these things. I see it all the time. People, the life AA gives us for some gets in the way of the very thing that generated the freedom. But maybe it wasn't freedom that was generated for those individuals. Maybe they don't see. Maybe it's relief and they haven't tasted freedom. I know I've tasted freedom. And the freedom, more so than any step, has to do with steps 10 and 11 for me. I used to think it was all about step 12. I used to think it was all about writing inventory and doing a fifth step. Now it has to do with steps 10 and 11 and 6 and 7. 10 and 11 and 6 and 7. And there's a connection there. The more grounded I am in 10 and 11, the less chaos I create in 6 and 7. And step 7 becomes about humility at that point. Yes, experience has humbled me with my character defects and my struggles, and I have to go to God with egg on my face and ask for help. But then there are periods of time where I'm not creating a bunch of harm in the world, but I see the powerlessness in my thinking. I see the powerlessness in certain areas of my life and how I'm physically taking myself and not getting enough exercise and how I'm not eating the right types of food and I'm not taking care of God's temple and all of these other things. And I start to see the powerlessness and I say, God, please help me. God, do something with your boy again and again and again. And this is an indicator of being in fit spiritual condition, not struggling, but with sincerity, all sorts of remarkable things will happen, is what the third step promises to say. And the sincerity is like, I need to have God. And another expression of that sincerity is my discipline in steps 10 and 11, because the discipline attached to step 10 and 11, that's also a sacrifice. Friday night at my home group, the topic was, what am I willing to sacrifice to maintain and grow this relationship with a power greater than myself? You know, unfortunately, I had to sacrifice a marriage. I was married to a beautiful woman that I still love to this day to a degree, and I don't have a bad word to say about her. We still communicate, not on a regular basis, but we were communicating last month, and there is no animosity between us. I was able to end that relationship with some grace and some dignity because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I had to sacrifice it because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because she wasn't a member of this fellowship. And she didn't understand why all of these things were more important than her. Now, my current partner, she's a very active member of the program and the fellowship. And I attempted to make my former wife feel like she was a close second place. But the reality was everything in AA was up here and she was down here with my current partner. She knows she falls right underneath there because there's a higher degree of awareness. And so I'm going to wrap up this talk here. And I wish I could spend an entire weekend talking about this. I do. Like me and my partner, we will spend a few hours talking about this subject because it's so vitally important. But in order to really see what's going on for this individual in the morning, like this morning, what I did was I asked myself two questions when I sat down to pray and meditate and read my books. Before I started, I asked myself, do I have knowledge of why it is I'm about to do these practices? Why am I going to pray? Why am I going to meditate? Why am I going to sit still and read these books and contemplate? And I don't care what the answer is. I just want to ask the question, because that asking of the question, it changes my orientation to this moment and it grounds me into the moment. And after about a minute and a half passes, I transition to a second question. The second question is my effort in what I'm about to do sincere? Is my heart connected to what I'm about to do, these practices? And I just watch. And without fail, every single time I make the considerations of these questions, I know what I'm about to do. The effort has now become sincere, and I want to grow this relationship, because this relationship with God, of the God of my understanding, is how I access fit spiritual condition. And I'm an individual who believes that people relapse for one reason and one reason alone. They are not in fit spiritual condition. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Tarek.